Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling. This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined, as always, by JD, by God Oliva. You guys heard a little bit of a different intro, and of course I screwed it up, but because I forgot when I put together the classic Brace for Impact intro, I forgot to add in the Voices of Wrestling plug at the beginning, which I didn't want to get heat for that. But anyway, you heard the classic Brace for Impact theme. JD, how are you doing, man?
I'm pretty good, man. I had a busy week. I'm about to monopolize this shit. So why don't you go first and tell me how you're doing?
I'm good, man. I just got done watching TNA Rebellion. I missed the beginning of it, so I'm gonna need the chat to tell me how that went. Because this shit comes on at like 2 p.m. here in Hawaii. This is my last pay-per-view in Hawaii, my last podcast in Hawaii. We're getting ready to go on hiatus. And my family wanted to go eat ice cream at the same time. And I was like, I can't tell them, no, daddy's got to watch pro wrestling so that way he can go do his podcast. So I, of course, said, hell yeah, let's go get ice cream. So we took the family out for ice cream and met up with the neighbors and got back, I think, after the second match. So the chat is going to have to help me out with that. But I thought it was a pretty watchable Rebellion. I enjoyed the show, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But JD, you had two big things happen this week, but let's talk about, one of them specifically.
So let's talk about Gaijin. For a couple months now, I've been sitting on this, and I didn't want to say nothing because you never know. When the time the Kickstarter ended and I sent out the digital rewards, I got a note from a guy named Brady Roberts, who's an actor and a pro wrestler, who really liked the book and was like, "Hey, man, I think this would make a good movie." And I said, "I agree with you." And I just kind of, whatever. And he's like, "No, I think this can happen." He's like, "I'm interested in representing it." And I was like, "Get the fuck out of here." So like, it was pretty cool, man. He's produced, we worked out a deal. He's producing an adaptation for potentially the big screen, potentially the small screen. We'll see how that evolves of Gaijin. And got a writer on working on the screenplay right now. I just read the first draft. It was surreal reading somebody else's interpretation of your words, but it was just it was crazy and cool. And like, we're so like the beginning, this is so at like the beginning of the process. And I don't really want to like get too much into things, cause it's a billion things can happen from here and nothing can happen and everything can happen. And it just, I've been down this road before, so I'm trying not to count chickens before the eggs are even laid. Right. So, but there's a chance it goes to film. So, I mean, like, it's pretty cool. It's what I went to school for. It's, that was always my childhood dream, is to be behind the scenes of a film. And, I kind of gave up on that when I found out that I personally hated making movies. So like the idea that somebody else would do it for me and I could just sit back with my family while somebody else does all the hard work and I don't have to do anything. It's pretty freaking awesome, man. So again, this is a several year process and it's just the ball starting to get rolling, but it's pretty cool. I'm really appreciative of Brady and company for what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm proud of you, man. And I was able to read Gaijin. I got an early copy of it.
Yeah, you got one, the first one.
Yeah, and while I was reading it, I did think, like, I was like, I think this could work as like either a movie or like a limited Netflix series, if they wanted it to be like a multiple season thing. I think like the characters have depth and layers that they could do that. They could stretch that out to be a long-term thing. And so I it looks like they're just, the script is out right now, I guess. And they're probably through the editing process and things like that, probably tossing around some ideas. And then what happens after that? Probably like just shop it around to studios and stuff.
I think so. I think that's what they're going to do. Yeah. I'm not involved. I wrote the book. I'm just kind of, I'm the guy who created the thing and I'm on the outside, which is just where I want to be. So that's okay with me. I mean, like I said, it's when you release something and put it out into the wild, you have no control over how anybody will handle it or accept it or move with it. So, I'm not really a film guy anymore. I don't really want to be. So the fact that somebody, what's nice about it is just this validation that the work in it itself was good. And I've always been proud of the book, and it's nice to know that people like it too. So that was my first thing for the week. The second I had, I talked to you guys, I told like a handful of people in my personal life about the tournament. I told everybody that listens to our show, like I announced on the show. But like the people actually know, I really kind of downplayed it. But I spent the week in Las Vegas and I wrestled in my first tournament in 22 years. And I took third.
Hell yeah. Got the bronze there for the tournament in the Masters division, right?
I won my first match in 30 seconds. And nice. It was that long because it took him forever to call the fall. The guy gave up when I put him on his back, and he kept seeing, even the guy goes, "What's taking so long to call this pin?" Because he wasn't fighting. And I was I don't know. Shut up. Because I thought he was trying to psych me out. And
hold on. Was your opponent Joe Hendry? I got to ask.
He did have a beard.
Yeah. Okay.
He was tall. Could have been.
I make that joke, but Joe Hendry actually did win several tournaments in England. And I actually was really good. Like wrestler, he didn't wrestle growing up, but he was a judo guy. After he became a pro wrestler, he entered some tournaments in Europe and actually won some tournaments and then came back to pro wrestling. So he wanted to do just like to prove himself, I guess.
That's pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah,
amateur wrestling in the UK is notoriously bad. So it doesn't surprise me that a guy with some judo background could actually have some success there. Which is funny because, like, you know, collar and elbow and, like, you know, the history of catch really starts in England, but, like, it really went a completely different direction than it did here in the United States. Yeah. Second round, I wrestled the eventual champion. He was a 10-time U.S. Open champ, multiple-time veterans-level world medalist, and he beat me. Like, I was competitive to the end. I got a couple real bad calls that I thought were bad. Then I had people reach out, goes, those were not good calls. I'm like, yeah. So I'd like to have that match back, but he beat me fair and square. And then I had the wrestle backs. I destroyed the next two guys. I mean, I'm pretty proud of that. And then in the third place match, I went out there and just let it loose. And I thought, this is my last match. I'm going to go after it. And then I immediately came off the mat and I looked at my buddy and I said, I don't want to be done. So, I'm going to keep competing until it's so cool, man. There were dudes there in their 70s that were wrestling because they have like different brackets in the Masters division, right? The age brackets. I saw this old dude out there, had to be 75 years old, having a blast, getting his ass whooped, you know? And I'm like, this is great. Like, I don't like to golf. I like to wrestle. So like, maybe this is my thing. So like, it was good. Like I worked really hard for a few months and I'm still pretty good, it turns out. And I think I have room to grow and get better. So, I mean, I think it's something I'm going to keep pursuing for a little bit.
That's awesome, man. Well, I'm really happy for you. I wish,
thanks, bud.
You know, yeah. No. And I mean, getting third after not competing for so long, I think that's pretty freaking tremendous. So, and maybe this is, you know, like you're calling, like you gotta, you know, you write wrestling books now that could become movies. You know what? I think they need to pick up Deluge.
It's probably my best story.
I loved that story. I was like reading. I was like, this is a fucking movie. Like Michael B. Jordan should be the star of this movie. Like I was reading.
Yes,
it. I was like,
yes, he should. I agree with that.
Because I was really into I'm really into the Creed movies, right? I just love those movies. I'm a Rocky guy. Really into the Creed movies. And I gotta kill a tab on my thing.
Hang tight. Go ahead. Keep going.
All right. Can you hear me? Can you hear me, JD? Am I still on the air, everybody? I got kicked. Okay. Yeah. So I was reading it and I was like, Michael B. Jordan should be the lead, the main star of Deluge. I love that story.
Available on Amazon currently.
King, I actually unfortunately had the Observer tab on to get the TNA results, but it started just destroying the computer. So I had to kill that tab. So my computer said, close this tab or we're shutting everything down. Basically,
close the tab.
Yeah. Oh, so I closed. So I don't have the, I don't have the, results in front of me. So, which is fine. You know what I'm going to do, JD? I'm going to, actually do something we haven't done in a while. Hey guys in the chat, if you guys just want to hop in and let us know what you thought of Rebellion, Hit that link that I just popped in the chat and you can come on at any time and join in. And if you don't want to, that's fine too. But let's go ahead and get into the TNA Rebellion results. JD, you did not get a chance to watch the show. I thought this was going to be like our big hurrah off into the sunset for a while, you know, until we go on hiatus and we're doing an old school Brace for Impact.
Season finale, Mike and JD.
Season finale. And but unfortunately I couldn't come through with a way for you to watch, so that just didn't work out.
I wasn't gonna pay for it, that's for sure.
Yeah. But I gotta say, I thought it was a pretty fun show, and we'll get everybody's opinion in the chat, whoever did watch it. But again, I thought it was a pretty fun show. I thought that the crowd was really good. Yeah, Mike and JD final bye-bye. That's pretty funny. I thought the crowd was really good. I thought they were hot the whole night. I thought they were well lit, and there was probably like 4,000 people there.
Good crowd.
Yeah, that's a good crowd. That's a good crowd for TNA. They came out with a story earlier in the week that it was like their biggest U.S. crowd in like over 10 years. So, pretty legit. I'm surprised that they still even had a show, even though Joe Hendry lost in 3 minutes of WrestleMania. I figured the company was dead.
Killed the company.
That's what I kept hearing, that it was going to kill the company. It was going to kill the title, kill all his momentum, and no one would come to the show. But sure enough, people still showed up. And in fact, they sold more tickets after that happened, and they ended up having a really good crowd.
I think that if TNA was a more serious company, I think there might be some validity to that. But I mean, like, I think that guys like us have lost the culture war as far as like what constitutes like serious pro wrestling. Yeah. And the simple fact of the matter is there's just more people that like what WWE does. So the fact that TNA is steering into it, not as competition too, because you cannot compete with, I'll say, a Vince McMahon brand and company, because whether you want to admit it or not, it still is. Like, the company still has Vince McMahon fingerprints all over it, right? You can't compete with Vince by being like Vince, right? Or Triple H, whatever. But you can be an accompaniment to them, which is what TNA is. And they've said, we are a offshoot company. We work with them, not against them. And it's honestly, it's been working for them. Like,
I can talk shit on it all I want, but like, if you're a bean counter that works there for Anthem, like, what do you care? You don't care that the identity of TNA has been stripped away, and now it's kind of like an offshoot WWE thing. But hey, we got a guest, day one subscriber to the Patreon, our homie Andre, man. What's Andre?
What's up, good, man? Y'all? Y'all hear me good?
Yeah, I can hear you, dude.
I just want to stop in real quick because I know it's your last show, because I've been supporting y'all for a minute, because y'all my guys. JD, congrats on your stuff. That shit's fucking awesome, bro.
Thank you.
Y'all be inspiring me. I be listening to y'all stuff, and not just like the wrestling stuff, since I'm like a younger man. When y'all speak about how y'all are like leaders and stuff, I really like tune into that stuff. Like, I really tap in and listen to what y'all have to say. So I'm really like excited for y'all going in these big steps in y'all lives. That shit's fucking awesome. That's all I really wanted to say. How the fuck do I get off here? I just wanted to say,
I don't want you to
y'all doing great, bro.
Thank you for the kind words. I will kick you out in a second, but this is the Rebellion Reaction Show. What did you think of Rebellion, my dude?
I was out, so I didn't really get to catch it. I just saw the Mike Santana match. That shit was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
At Razor's Edge, Tatasha Steeles. Are they crazy?
Dude.
Are they fucking minds?
So Mike Santana hit a Razor's Edge from the ring apron to the outside through a table. It was supposed to be similar to what Bubba Ray Dudley did to Mae Young back in the day, except Santana did not protect her at all.
He just launched her.
He sat down with her, but like, you know how Bubba Ray was like holding her and like he took all the impact on him?
Yeah.
No, he just dropped her on her head through the table. It was fantastic. I mean, it was brutal, dude. That match was insane. I think our friend Draven. Javier Draven in the chat was saying that was the match of the night. I don't think it's even close. Like, unless the Ultimate X match is better than that. I didn't get a chance to watch Ultimate X, so I want everybody's opinion of that. But
all I saw of that is Leon Slater did not get caught. He did the one thing we thought he was going to do, and then they just dropped him straight through the middle. Six big old dudes face to the ground. Insanity.
So I didn't see that. Is that why Joey Janela tweeted that TNA needs to bring in Gringo Loco and
100%. They had like all these big people. It looked like AJ Francis out there for whatever reason, and nobody caught him straight to the face.
I wonder if he has heat. Like,
for the record, they should bring in Gringo Loco because he's the best base working in like independent wrestling. That dude can catch anybody. He's awesome.
They brought him in for a dark match recently. I hope they keep him around.
They should. Gringo Loco's good.
Yeah, he is good.
Chicago guy.
All right, man. Andre, it's great having you here. Thank you for all your support over the years, man. He's been a day one Patreon subscriber. So
thank you. Thank you, Andre.
I'm glad we were able to finally get you on, dude. And I'll hit you up whenever we're on our way back. All right, man?
You already know, man. Appreciate
y'all. Take care, man.
All right. I had to kick from the studio. All right. Links in the chat, guys, if you guys want to hop in just like Andre did. But let's see. So Javier Draven said, in his opinion, the best Ultimate X match in a long time. Okay. So I'm definitely going to go back and watch that, and I'll provide some coverage of it on Twitter because I feel embarrassed that I wasn't able to see it. But I did want to hop in. So my favorite match of the night was definitely Mike Santana and Mustafa Ali. I think Mustafa Ali got a bad rap coming out of WWE because he's doing a gimmick. He has worked on this gimmick for going on almost 2 years now. I think he's perfected the gimmick, and his matches are great. He's really good at the storytelling part of his matches. And then I think him and Mike Santana were put on this earth to wrestle each other. I think they just have really good chemistry. Not only that, they have really good chemistry in all of their promos. They're doing a lot of vignettes. a lot of acting type stuff. Okay, so JD, I'm gonna give you the premise of this. I'm gonna give you the premise of this feud that we have in pro wrestling. And for all my complaints about TNA being unoriginal, they have the most original storyline going in all of pro wrestling. So, you know, Mustafa Ali signs, right? He immediately calls out Santana because Santana's like up here, right? In the company. He's wanting to get to the title, so Mike Santana wants to go through him. But Mike Santana is a creepy politician. That's his gimmick. And he wants to get in Mike Santana's head. Santana's an alcoholic, right? And so Mustafa Ali beat him in the first match and afterwards gave him a beer and was trying to convince him to drink the beer. And Santana, that like pissed him off even more. A couple weeks later, Santana brings in one of his guys from his AA meetings to like help him out. He's newly sober. He gets him a job with TNA working backstage, right? Like doing the ring setup, stuff like that. Well, Ali finds this guy and then talks so much shit to him and it hurts his feelings so bad, convinces him to relapse. So Mike Santana then finds him passed out drunk backstage, convinces him to relapse. This pisses off Santana really bad. So Santana then kidnaps one of Ali's friends, John Skyler, and puts him in the back of a car and then starts to interrogate him and slap the shit out of him while he's handcuffed to a chair and then threatens to kill him. So we have pieces of shit in TNA. It's not quite burning a guy's house down or like doing a home invasion and staring at a baby, but I thought this was a pretty intricate storyline. And I think the two guys doing it are pretty good performers. And so we got to this point and now they had a false count anywhere match. And I thought it was going to be pretty good. It was like way above what I expected it to be. The only bad part of the match is that Mike Santana introduces a barbed wire bat. It gets used on him. And right before that happens, the camera zooms in and they show Mike Santana pulling a razor blade out of his wrist tape. And so unfortunately we saw that coming, but the match did end with a lot of blood. So that was really, really good.
Man, that's interesting. I have some complicated thoughts on that. Just the angle itself, because I haven't watched TNA in forever. I initially balk at the idea of using alcoholism in professional wrestling, mainly because it's like, it's close to our lives. You as a recovering, me as the kid of a recovering. However, I'm also the same guy that says that you know, fiction and even pro wrestling can steer into those kind of things if they have something to say about it. So I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm intrigued. I think as long as it's treated with delicacy and kid gloves and not cheaply, because pro wrestling is so easy to get tawdry with everything. Yeah. How you watch the show every week? How was it treated? Like, how did you feel watching it?
I'm a guy that doesn't get his feelings hurt.
I know you aren't. I'm just curious.
You know what I mean? Like, and so what is over the edge for me is far different than what's over the edge for most people. I found it to be entertaining. I would watch it and then I would go to an AA meeting and I was like, so it doesn't affect me like that. The only way I wouldn't like it is if they like what they did to Scott Hall back in the day, because they did that with Scott Hall and he did relapse and he's puking up everywhere and they show him drinking and he's like actually drinking, or at one point they poured beer on him. Mm-hmm. That I wouldn't be cool with, because like, you pour beer on me, I'm likely to go to jail. Straight up, like that is likely to happen. So, and I just wouldn't put myself in that position to where, like, in a storyline, I would do that. But I've also been sober a long time and I'm fairly strong headed. So, they haven't gone anywhere near that. Like, they did put a beer in the ring, but it didn't get like to the where like Mustafa Ali poured it on him. They never went that far. He was at meetings, but they never called it AA. So, they didn't really disrespect like the sanctity of that culture. So, they never went that far. He's only talking about being sober and like, instead of using like I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and all that stuff, he's just talking about his life's journey. Mike Santana is at his best whenever he can bring his real life into what he's doing. He's a very passionate guy.
Agreed.
And this is a personal story to him, and him fighting a guy like Ali is like him fighting his demons, and that's why it's made this thing so good. So I think that if they didn't do it the way that they did it, and if they didn't perform it so well, and they could have went totally cheap. It could have went like 1990s, like early 2000s type cheap, but they never went that far. It's a complicated story to tell, but I thought they did a pretty good job of doing it.
That's fascinating. I'm actually interested. That's the most interesting thing I've heard about TNA in a long, long time. Wrestling in general. I like the idea that you can, I don't hate the idea of trying to like tackle big subject matter in pro wrestling. Like, I don't think it has to be just about matches. Like, I like some drama. I like some intrigue. I like you to get out of the box a little bit. That's a big swing, and it seems like they've handled it pretty good. I don't know, man. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's being universally praised. I did see a couple of people say that they were offended by it, but
I get it. I get it.
I get it, but I don't know how serious they were, you know, like, sure. You know, so, but like, I think you're allowed to be offended by things. And I think that that's you're allowed to be offended by television. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fine. But I don't think that the TV show shouldn't do it because a couple of people thought that they were offended. Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think that sometimes in pro wrestling, everything has to be happy, shiny people. Right. And that's not interesting to me. Like, I like my villains having teeth. I like reality being reflected in things. And I don't, and that's the thing with pro wrestling is it has to walk a fine line. Cause if it gets too drama-y, it becomes melodrama. Like, that's my beef with WWE all the time is it's all melodrama all the time. Like, it's all, you never loved me and stuff like that. Like, it's always, it's always so like,
well, WWE likes to be Days of Our Lives. They like to be daytime soap operas. You know what I mean? And I think what TNA was trying to do, instead of being daytime soap opera, they were trying to be, you know, like primetime cable drama with this story. And then with the Steve Macklin and Eric Young story, because Steve Macklin with this story that they're doing is Steve Macklin is going through with his PTSD. And is having trouble trusting people. And Eric Young turned on Josh Alexander, but he wanted Macklin to join him. And he's like, you know, I'm not going to join you and this, this, and that. And they were kind of going back and forth for a little bit with Eric Young trying to regain his trust. And then he offered him a spot in his new faction in the latest episode of Impact while they're sitting by a fire drinking whiskey. And Macklin turned him down yet again. And all of a sudden, Macklin walked off and he passed out because Eric Young had roofied him. So he just kind of goes off a cliff there. And like, and then Eric Young took Macklin's journal and then like ripped it up and threw it into a fire. So they're taking some big swings on TNA.
Well, I was going to say it seems like they're handling that one pretty well too. Maybe not.
Maybe not the roofie part. Yeah.
You might have lost me with the roofie and the throwing the journal in the fire.
I liked everything about it except for like we didn't have to go there with the roofie part, right? So, you know, but I got what they were trying to do, and so with TNA they're doing some of these more like dramatic kind of filmy like movie style angles without going into science fiction and horror,
which that was one of the reasons that's one that broke me on TNA. I'll tell a story forever. Taylor Wilde playing with the fucking tarot cards on the ring apron during a match. I remember we had the live show and I'm like, I can't fucking do it anymore, Mike. I just can't do it. So like, this is a far cry from that. And I don't know, man, when you swing for the fences, sometimes you hit a home run and sometimes you hit a pop fly. So maybe that's kind of what we got here with these two stories.
Yeah, I thought the story was good overall. That it was just that part of it. I was just like, that's a little overboard for me.
The roofie's a little much.
Here's the thing about TNA is they struggle to set themselves apart. And right now they're using so many people, not only that currently work for WWE, that used to work for WWE, they're an affiliate of WWE of some sort. And so they're kind of got everything WWE stinks. So anytime anybody talks about TNA, they always have to talk about WWE. So, that's just the boat that they're in. That's what they chose. And that's kind of where they're at. So some of the content that they do that WWE wouldn't touch, I don't think they're getting any credit for, even though they are trying to do some different things. But they're just not getting any type of credit for it other than like on my show. But I will shit on them accordingly. As everyone well knows, they've been following along with a Brace for Impact. So JD, tonight on Rebellion, they had actually add one more. I think they had 9 people from NXT on this show.
Damn. That's an NXT show.
Yeah. That essentially, so they were involved in 3 matches, one on the countdown show. And then they had a women's match, which was a fatal four way, but two tag teams were NXT. And then in the main event, Ethan Page is in the main event. And then after the main event, Trick Williams made his TNA debut and he attacked Joe Hendry. He's a heel now. So, so there you go. So they're not fighting against it. I think I'm fighting that battle for them not to be so WWE style, but they're not even fighting it. I think that's what they're looking for. That's what they want.
No, I think they're embracing it, and they're doing the WWE style thing. They're trying to find their own niche with it. So, it's not really for me. Like when you have Ethan Page showing up in the main event, and Ethan Page is always Ethan Page to me. Yeah. And again, but he does have history in this company, so it does kind of make sense that he would show up. Trick Bling, I mean, that's just WWE stuff. 9 NXT people is
it's a bit much
because now you're not really taking care of your own company at this point, you know?
Well, and the problem is that they just released a bunch of people and they're backfilling those slots with NXT people. And so now less people have jobs. Like Alan Angels just got released. Hammerstone just got released. And then they had all of the, people that got released in December. And you know what? And I got to give some people credit. People were like saying, Mike, what's going to happen is that NXT talent are going to take those slots. And I was like, they only usually have like one or two on the show. It's not really that big. Well, then on this pay-per-view, you had 9 different NXT people being featured.
I mean, I guess this is my fear of like when we talked about this happening, I said WWE doesn't just play nice. They come in and say, we are doing this now. And now you're in, like, now you got their main champ. Again, I don't like the fact that, and again, you could tell me it doesn't matter to the bottom line. And I can't argue with you on that. I'm just telling you, I don't like the fact that they brought their champion and made him look like a dork. Now right. It does play because it's Joe Hendry, right? And Joe, and you know, Randy Orton will eat up the other two guys too when he gets his opportunity, because that's what Randy Orton does. Right. But I personally, JD Oliva, I'm not saying this is bad for TNA, blah, blah, blah. I'm just saying I don't really care for it. You know, yeah. I personally don't think it makes your company look great. It makes them look like, well, this is kind of what the NXT guys do when they're not on NXT. And I don't know if that's a long-term sustainability thing. I mean, WWE don't care. They got another place they can have their guys work and give more people opportunity on NXT, right? That's what they want. I don't know.
We'll see. Delirious knows all. He knows all well how this ends. You know what I mean? Because look at how. Yeah. Look at what carried Ring of Honor for years, and it was him, leveraging that New Japan relationship. Hold that thought on New Japan, by the way. We got to talk about New Japan in a sec.
Intriguing.
And so we'll see how this ends. I don't know. I'll be back on this show hopefully in July, right after Slammiversary, and we'll talk about it. All right, I got the results up here. Let's go to the pre-show. Surprise, surprise, NXT talent. You got Fallon Henley, JC Jane, and Jasmine Nix. Those are real people, by the way. They defeated Rosemary, Zaya Brookside, and Lei Ying Li. So there you go. They announced that due to travel issues, Dango can't wrestle. So that was good news for everybody. And then they go to the Walk with Elijah Open Challenge. Elijah defeated none other than Shane Haste. And they announced him as representing the Mighty Don't Kneel, TMDK, the faction in New Japan. They said he was a New Japan wrestler, and he came out. He shouted, "I walk alone." He of course lost to Elijah. Then later in the show, during a trios match, Ace Austin was introduced as being a member of Bullet Club. They put the Bullet Club theme back in there. He's being introduced as Bullet Club. I find that fascinating because they TNA and New Japan had stopped working together for a while. And once TNA decided to focus on their relationship and their partnership with NXT, New Japan kind of like went over this side. New Japan's no longer on Access TV. They're fully embedded with AEW. And then of course they send some of their talent. I think they're non-contracted talent. They send them to MLW, but they're fully embedded with AEW. And now looks like they got a guy they sent over, Shane Haste, over here. And I wonder what that's going to look like going forward. How is that all going to work?
It's super interesting. I do like, Shane Haste is kind of like the other guy in the Mighty Don't Kneel right now. So yeah. Like it's intriguing. It's super intriguing. I find it interesting too that Ace Austin was introduced as Bullet Club when there really is no Bullet Club right now, right? You have War Dogs, House of Torture is totally separate, right? Yeah. Like there's not like the closest thing they have to Bullet Club is the Bucks, who right. make occasional appearances. So like, I don't know. This is something this is a terrible thing for a podcaster to say, but I'm curious to hear the Observer tomorrow morning, the Observer, radio tomorrow morning, hear what Dave has to say. Cause Dave's going to be the guy who knows kind of what's going on. And we have someone in the chat saying Shane lives in LA. That's true. He does. Cause he worked in WWE. He was the last, like when the Mighty Don't Kneel, the original TMDK, or what were they called in WWE?
TM61.
Yeah. He stayed around forever. Shane Haste was Bonesaw
McGraw,
whatever the fuck his name was in Retribution.
Right.
Remember that shit angle? He was there the longest, and he's been kind of a back in New Japan. So
my friend Billy DM'd me. He's like, "What do you think of Shane Haste being a surprise opponent?" And I said, "Shane Waste."
exactly.
They wasted a surprise on Shane Haste. Haste has wrestled in TNA before. As a part of the New Japan partnership, like he's done some shots with them. So he knows these people. And of course, like half the fucking roster worked with him whenever he was in NXT. So it could be nothing. It could be like New Japan was never really like locked into a deal with AEW where they can't send talent to other companies. Right. Cause they've been sending talent this whole time to MLW. They were sending talent to TNA while the AEW partnership was going, they're sending talent TNA that whole time. So it's not like this has been an exclusivity thing. They just stopped working together for a while. Now TNA is in bed with WWE. And so that's the part that complicates things is because you think that Tony Khan wouldn't want his partner sending talent to TNA, and TNA is clearly being propped up by WWE to take away the market share from AEW.
Well, and here's something too, is like, I don't think Shane Haste is under contract to New Japan. So it's entirely possible that TNA just said it, that they just had him on there and just said, "Hey, he's in there." And they just said, "Oh, hey, by the way, Ace Austin's in Bullet Club." It could just be a simple fact of WWE and TNA fucking with shit, which is not entirely out of the blue. I mean, I know a lot of people are going to run with this idea and be like, "Oh, AEW in New Japan, that's a thing of the past." Here we go. Interesting that after Rock wears a New Japan shirt. Right. It is. But at the same time, AEW and New Japan just announced they're doing a big show together, two big shows together in the UK. You know, AEW sending talent over for Best Super Junior, TNA is not. So like the only thing to me, this reads more of WWE fucking with stuff at this point. Like put up everything. Here, I'll pull this up.
Yeah. Okay, so JD, you didn't see this, but earlier today, they deleted the tweet, so I can't pull it up. But earlier today, New Japan tweeted out a promotional thing promoting one of their events. They said it was, I think it was Dontaku, and they said it's happening NXT weekend as opposed to next weekend. But it was in all caps, NXT. And they left it up for hours. And then people are like, "Hey, you're not working with NXT. Why are you saying this?" Like, some of the hardcores like getting pissed. But it was very clearly a typo. They ended up deleting the tweet. So.
Was it from the New Japan 1972 account?
Global and New Japan Global. Probably some fucking white guy that also tweets about wrestling on his phone and is probably an NXT fan. Yeah.
Probably. And probably just likes all pro wrestling and didn't even realize he did it. That's more to be, it could be Ling in the Rock scenario. I don't think there is a scenario because I don't think you're signing deals like this. We'll put it this way too. Unless WWE is buying New Japan, which is always possible, right?
Yeah. I don't want to poo-poo that idea, by the way, because I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
I don't either, but I don't see Bushiroad selling New Japan right now. But it's a possible, money talks. They have deals, right? Like they have signed, and also too, WWE bought AAA. And New Japan, you want to talk about loyal. And this is the thing is loyalty in the Japanese business world is a really, really strict thing. Like they take that shit seriously. Like New Japan would not remember back when New Japan and the first Forbidden Doors, Penta and Phoenix, those guys couldn't work that show because New Japan has a relationship with CMLL. And now WWE just buys AAA. So, I mean, like you guys ought to understand how these things work. Someone says NXT New Japan in the chat. That could be Noah. Like, why establish? Yeah. Here's the thing: the letters NXT don't mean anything in Japan or or Mexico. AAA and NOAH have a lot more value than NXT. I know this hurts Paul's ego to hear that. NXT UK meant absolutely nothing over there.
Yeah, I think they know that now, which is why they bought AAA, because they've been trying to get into that market in Mexico forever, and they have not been able to penetrate it. They've been trying to get into the market in Japan, and that's why they've been doing business with NOAH. Mara Fuji was just at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. He was there taking pictures with everybody. He was an invited guest.
Inamuro's done a bunch of stuff with NXT already.
Inamuro's been on an excursion here in NXT, and he just announced that he's heading back to NOAH. So his excursion's over. They got one more match coming up. I think it's a tag title match, so which he will very likely be losing on his way back to Japan. That's just how they do business. But so if I were to venture a guess, like if WWE's buying any Japanese promotion, it's probably NOAH. Versus New Japan. I just don't want to say that New Japan's out of the equation. I like people say, is New Japan for sale? I'm telling you right now, every company's for sale. Every company's for like my pickup truck don't have a for sale sign on it, but if you want it, I'm listening. You know what I mean? Like that's just the way business goes.
It's been, anyone can get out of business at any time they want to. Like any company is for sale. WWE said for years they weren't for sale until Vince decided they were, right? And like same with Tony Khan and AEW, they're like, I don't think they're in a position where Tony's going to have it till he's bored with it. Quite frankly, I don't think that happens. But like any company is for sale if the buyer is motivated to move. And I don't see Bushiroad being in a mood to move New Japan, especially because business is up this year. But NOAH, and again, WWE is in a stronger position with NOAH. NOAH is popular currently in Tokyo specifically. NOAH shows NOAH has grossed more this current year in Kirkin Hall, right? The hub of wrestling in Japan, than anyone else in Tokyo this year. Like, so NOAH's actually doing pretty good, and WWE has a relationship with them, and it's going to be easier for them just to work with NOAH, quite frankly, than it will be to work for New Japan.
Yeah, right. So I do find it interesting. And let's see, Shub says, for as much as I'd love for it to be a conspiracy, I think this Shane Hayes situation is just a coincidence. It could be.
The simplest answer is usually the correct one, but it's something you have to. I think he's probably right.
Yeah,
but it's because again, he's a freelancer, right? So he can go work wherever. And I think steering into the New Japan thing is just WWE needling, because they do that, right?
Case in point, The Rock wearing the New Japan shirt.
Case in point, The Rock wearing the New Japan shirt. I think that's Rock fucking with stuff, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And The Rock fucks with his own company all the time. Did you listen to the Pat McAfee interview? He buried everybody who worked there.
Yeah, that was so. We should have gotten into that to start the show. He went on to Pat McAfee earlier this week and buried Triple H, buried WWE. Now you're gonna say Mikey didn't go on there to say anything bad. You gotta sparse between the words. He said that he was added to Elimination Chamber because ticket sales were down and they needed the rub, right? They needed to bring him on. That is burying the booker. You don't say that in public.
100%. He never mentions Levesque either when he talks about the people that worked there, because these two have hated each other since 1996.
Yes.
They've never, ever liked each other. They still don't. It drives Levesque crazy that he's the head of creative and he's still underneath Rock. Right.
And it's because the Rock is in an elevated position over him because he's on the fucking board of corporate, not WWE board, TKO board. You know what I mean? Like he is on the pecking order. He is above Triple H. And the Rock didn't get his creative that he wanted, and he just bowed out and essentially like tanked. They couldn't come to an agreement, and the WrestleMania main event got tanked. Hold on. See, Joe Gilbert said the Rock's ego has been crushed lately, and WWE is no longer a safe space to go and get cheered for the first time since he left for Hollywood. Yeah. Although it's driving him mad. Yeah. I think that hopefully Moana 2 like brought his ego back up. That movie was a hit. So
Shazam was a hit, or not Shazam, his Black Adam movie was really bad, and that kind of that spiral started a spiral.
Well, like, he got fired from DC essentially. Like who was the one that took over DC? James Gunn.
Gunn. Well, he pulled his power play at the end of because he tried to reboot everything. They brought Henry Cavill back in that and then that one. And the problem with that was that it was not a good movie.
Yeah. So I'll be honest, I will push back and say that I enjoyed Black Adam. But when I watch superhero movies, Mike checks his brain at the door. You know what I mean? And I just kind of watch it for what it is. I don't have the backstory of Black Adam. I never read Black Adam. So I just liked it as a movie. I thought it was good.
I love Black Adam. He's one of my favorite characters. Legit, one of my favorite characters. Jeff Johns' JSA run in the early 2000s was fantastic. And it was all about the rise of Black Adam. Like, this would make a great movie. When they announced Rock was going to play him, I was like, perfect. This is going to be awesome. And it wasn't awesome.
Yeah. and then it was a bomb. That movie did bomb. Like, legitimately.
But James Gunn's Superman looks freaking great. So it all worked out good. And Rock, I mean, this thing too, is Rock is in a weird position where he does have so much stroke and power. And WWE's fans love Triple H so much. And I enjoy listening to our boss, Joe Lanza, bury Triple H. I love it. Sometimes, like, I don't think they're unhinged rants, but they're great rants. And I agree with a lot of them. But I mean, say what you want, WWE fans love him. Even like, because we were NXT fans from back in the day. And like, they always had great big shows, but the show was kind of hit or miss and kind of boring from time to time.
The weekly TV show was not good, but the takeovers were fantastic.
So, I mean, like, he's kind of a meat and potatoes booker right now. And Lanza brings up some good points. The stuff that made WWE hot was Vince's Final Stand, right? It was the Bloodline and Sami Zayn. That was Vince. Yeah. And mainly is probably more Paul Heyman, quite frankly, than anybody. Mm-hmm. And pushing Cody as the top guy, that was Vince. The Wyatt Six, where's that gone? You know what I'm saying? Like,
they can't seem to get themselves back on television. It's gonna be interesting because they just started kind of a new like top heel group with Paul Heyman and Seth Rollins. I just don't know that that's going to have the same legs as the Bloodline, but how could you, right? Like,
Bloodline is one of the top, like, in this era, yeah. it's like the top. Like, that is the storyline that brought WWE back to prominence. Like, say what you want, that happening at the same time as Cody making that big jump. And by the way, Cody doesn't make that big jump without leaving in the first place. And when Cody, I want to go back and read some of Cody's interviews from 2016 and talk about the shit that was pissing him off at the time. It was Triple H and NXT. Yeah. And he would wildly talk about how the only thing that they care about is NXT.
Yeah.
And that guy went off and became famous on his own and came back. And I'm sure, because that's not a Paul, none of that American Dream or American Nightmare stuff has anything to do with Paul Heyman. But we genuflect. The man had a statue made for himself and talked about himself for an hour. What an insecure turd.
Dude, it wasn't just that. Not only the statue that he pretended he didn't know was real. The Hall of Fame announcement that he pretended he didn't know about, and they had t-shirts made already. Then the entire Hall of Fame show, in between each induction, they showed another video glazing Triple H. Like, they filleted that man for like 3 hours.
We talk about how Vince was an egomaniac. Vince never was comfortable with people talking about how great Vince was. Like, on the show when he would have the Mr. McMahon character, that'd be one thing. But actual Vince McMahon would be like, no, don't talk about me.
Yeah,
you know, Hunter does not have that problem at all.
No, and he opens every show, like the big show. He's the one that opens it. It was a whole thing. All right, let's get back to Rebellion. Sorry, we'll get back to Rebellion. Sorry, comments, I'm coming to you guys. You guys are going to carry the show. I appreciate it. Rebellion. So the show opens up, X Division Championship match. Moose retained the title against Leon Slater, Matt Cardona, El Hijo del Vikingo from WWE Triple A, Casey Navarro, and Sidney Akeem. Sidney Akeem, another former WWE person that's in TNA now. And according to Javier Draven, buddy in the chat, said it was the best X Division or Ultimate X match in a long time. So I'm going to have to go back and watch that, but it says very fun here in this thread. So Moose retains. He's still the X Division champion. Knockouts Tag Team Championship match. Ash and Heather by Elegance retained over Danny Luna, Jody Threat, Jakara Jackson and Lash Legend from NXT, and Gigi Dolin and Tatum Paxley from NXT. So TNA getting the victory there. Ash got the Ash did her version of the Swanton Bomb on Jody Threat for the win.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantanja products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantanja products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, now here's where I... What's that? Go ahead.
Dana Brooke did a Swanton bomb?
It's a front flip.
Okay.
Yeah, she doesn't do it the same way that Jeff Hardy does.
So I guess Leon Slater almost died, and the chat wants us to talk about that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Chat. Let's see. I wonder if, you know, could I pull that clip up without getting nuked? Do you think?
I don't know. We're going away. What? Get nuked? What the hell? I'm kidding.
So apparently, Leon Slater did a 450 Swanton off the ropes to the outside, and nobody caught him. So I'm going to type into the thing here, Leon Slater, Rebellion. Let's see if I can pull up a clip here.
Why not? We're reviewing a show.
Oh gosh. Okay. Okay. I got it right here. Hold on. Let me pull this up. This is bad radio, but fuck it. We're live and, we're going off the air for a couple of months. So, if this gets the Voices of Wrestling YouTube nuked, I apologize. Okay, sorry, here Jeff. It is. Here it is.
If not higher, Slater is it?
Ooh!
Jesus Christ!
Here, let's watch it again, and then I'll get off of it. Oh! Look at all those fucking assholes down there. They didn't catch him.
They just stand there looking at him. Someone, I think it might have been, was it Moose that stuck his hand out and like half-assed tried to catch him?
Yeah, he was like, well, Moose is an offensive tackle. He doesn't know how to catch things. So like that's... And AJ Francis is a defensive tackle, so obviously he doesn't know how to catch. But you would think some of those other X Division wrestlers that are there would have caught him. Instead, he just he kind of just split the uprights a little bit and just kind of like just dove in.
He threaded the needle.
If I'm in charge of TNA, like some people are getting fired in that match. Like, thankfully, some of those people don't actually work for TNA. Like Matt Cardona doesn't work there, and Vikingo is WWE now. So I'm just like, come on.
You don't want Vikingo's like 5'2". You don't want Vikingo catching a guy flying. Like that's why you put big guys in these matches.
They had 200-300 pounders out there and neither one of them got in the way. Like, yeah, the King of the North says AJ Francis big ass couldn't get in the way.
I mean, AJ Francis finds a way to fuck everything up, so I can't be surprised that he didn't catch
him. He's not even in the match. It's his job to be somebody to jump on, and he just couldn't get that right.
Jesus Christ. I can't believe he didn't die. And that's I can't believe he's not seriously hurt. Like, that's a nasty looking spot. Fuck.
So the chat's going crazy on this. Hold on. Leon Slater, okay, after not being caught by anybody. Shubb said, weird finish with Slater very clearly touching the mat while holding the title, but Moose speared him and won the match. So TNA is telling a story. They've been beating Slater like a drum, and they keep announcing that his goal is to be the youngest X Division champion ever. I think they're building the story where he keeps getting beat up until it's almost his birthday, and then he's going to win the title before he becomes too old to be the youngest champion ever. I believe that's the story that they're telling. I don't know if they'll execute it. I just think that's what they're trying to tell. And I like that story, but yeah.
We have to make it to his next birthday after tonight.
Yes. Moose mistimed the finish, but besides that, it was good. Billy says KO tag match was unwatchable because of production issues. Well, I'm glad I didn't watch it. But Joe said that was rough.
Sounds like it was unwatchable because of the talent involved.
Ayo. That's so funny. Yeah, it looks like he was 15 feet above and just went straight to the floor.
In pro wrestling terms, he's probably more like 9, but that's still, I don't want to fall from 9 feet and have no one catch me.
Yeah. Billy says Leon Slater's birthday is in September. So I get the feeling that it might be a Slammiversary thing or maybe even something in August. So that could work. But let's get to the trios match that they had. Trey Miguel, Zachary Wentz, and Ace Austin with X-Pac in their corner defeated Eddie Edwards, Brian Myers, and Moose. At one point during the match, Alicia Edwards started to cheat, and X-Pac came in and gave her the X-Factor in the middle of the ring, of course. And then he starts hitting spin kicks, and I was like, this guy's the best wrestler in the match. It's like he can still do those spin kicks, man. He still looked good.
We don't talk enough about how damn good Sean Waltman was. He was really good, especially in an era where guys weren't that, like, you think about how much of a game changer that guy was, like showing like the 1-2-3 kid showing up in WWE TV in 1993 was such a change to what regular TV wrestling was like in that era. I give that guy a ton of credit for really helping pioneer the cruiserweight style. Cause again, he was tall, but he was lean. Like it was such a visual dichotomy from what we have been used to. And I think he's really a bigger impact in pro wrestling than people realize.
Yeah. I thought this match was actually a lot of fun. I thought this was a really good match. I like the way they used Waltman in the match after, like, as it was over, they started doing the DX chops and Tom Hannafin's like, who would ever thought we'd be seeing a version of D-Generation X in TNA. And I'm like, brother, Sean Waltman's been in TNA. You had the fucking New Age Outlaws have been in TNA. China did a match in TNA. Like, they have had TNA inclusion since its inception.
Yeah, DX inclusion. Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's Hannafin. I mean,
they never did say the name D-Generation X. I get the feeling WWE just let him do it. And like, Waltman was wearing a DX t-shirt, so like, which is something that he couldn't have done back in the day, but they're partners now, so that's fine. King of the North makes a good point. Billy Gunn did blackface in TNA. Yeah, so he did the blackface angle in WWE first. And he brought that creative genius with him to TNA and did that whenever they were feuding with the Dudley Boys there.
Went on to manage a black tag team in AEW. Life is interesting.
Yeah. Well, he probably didn't even know the history of how racist that is.
Oh, I get it.
Most wrestlers are stupid.
Correct.
And I'll be honest, 22, 23-year-old Mike Gilbert didn't quite understand. It took like a little bit later until I got educated.
Yeah, same here. Like I think I was 18 when they first did 17 when they first did that skit for that very uncomfortable Nation of Domination skit. Yeah. You look back on it and you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Zachary Wentz did a UFO cutter to Moose and won the match. So Wentz got a pin on Moose. So it looks like he'll be next in line for a title shot. TNA International Championship. Steve Macklin defeats Eric Young. So Macklin got revenge for being roofied. I thought pretty good. Not as good as the previous match, but I did think it was pretty good. Hard hitting, of course, with these two guys. Northern Armory were in Young's corner. They got thrown out, of course. At one point, Steve Macklin went for the KIA, his spear into the turnbuckle, and then dove completely to the outside and missed, and then like hit his head on the floor. Still continued the match because he's fucking Steve Macklin, of course. Steve
Macklin's a man.
Yeah, he's a bit of a badass. Anyway, he hit the Busako knee and the KIA for the finish. Afterwards, Eric Young and the Northern Armory attacked Steve Macklin and then wrapped a chain around his neck and hung him over the rope. So it looks like we're headed towards a dog collar match. So IO Production says, give me a dog collar. So King of the North said Moose was in two matches. Yes, he was. JDC missed the town because he had a booking the night before and couldn't make it in time. So he's probably got heat, to be honest with you. I don't know. But before pay-per-view, you should probably clear your schedule as well.
Probably.
Yeah. They're keeping his ass on television. If not, he'd be in NWA right now. Match was pretty good, and it looks like we're going to get a continuation of that feud. Falls Count Anywhere match, by far the match of the night. Now, I say that knowing that I didn't watch the Ultimate X match, but Mike Santana defeated Mustafa Ali. So Mustafa Ali has like this, his cronies, Jason Hotch and John Skyler. He's got Tasha Steeles as like his press secretary. And like, he's got like a Secret Service guys that of course are involved in the match, but Mike Santana handcuffed them to the ring and then put them up against the steel steps, and the steel steps standing up tall in the corner, like on its long edge. And then he got on top of the steps, pulled Mustafa Ali, and then did a suplex from the top of the steel steps, like, so like probably like 7-8 feet in the air, and then threw a table. Mustafa Ali also did a 450 splash from the top of the ropes to the outside, through a table. So he did that. And then of course the one of the best moves of the night was when Mike Santana did a powerbomb to Tasha Steelz, and she landed right on her head from the outside to a table. So lots of table spots. They had a barbed wire bat spot, which of course, unfortunately, the cameraman zoomed in on Mike Santana grabbing his blade like right before that happened. So outside of that, it was like a pretty fucking perfect match. I thought it was a really, really good match. IO Production says, go watch Ali versus Santana. Yeah, I agree. Javier Draven says, I wish Santana had Ortiz and Diamante to help him out. Ortiz works somewhere else, and so does Diamante. But Homicide would have been cool, but Homicide's obviously got a medical issue right now. So
Don't Santana and Ortiz legitimately hate each other still?
They do. Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. Okay. Billy says, that was the best false count anywhere match that I can remember in years. For TNA, yeah. Like, because I'll be honest, I'm not a fan of false count anywhere matches. So whenever they introduced that stipulation, I was like, oh, okay, fucking garbage.
It's so played out. Yeah, it's all garbage matches, walking brawls. And
yeah, but I thought their interpretation of it, or their take on it, was really good. So Mike is recommending everybody go watch the false count anywhere match between Mike Santana and Mustafa Ali. Mustafa Ali is probably doing the best work of his career, and Mike Santana by far. How long is he doing the best work of his career? When Joe Hendry is fucking gone, like, this is the guy. This is the guy they need to build this company around.
I agree. I think they're going to need a palate cleanser, right? Because Joe, I mean, say what you want. Joe Hendry is doing great work for Joe Hendry.
Yeah.
It's not like legitimizing it, but I think with Mike Santana, you can make a serious guy again in a different direction for the company. You know,
Here's why I like Mike Santana. He knows he's a top star in TNA. Mm-hmm. He just wrestled Takeshita, who is a top, like not tippy top, but like a guy in AEW.
And New Japan.
And in New Japan, he's not doing jobs to Takeshi. Dude, he don't give a fuck.
Dude just beat fucking Tanahashi.
Yeah. Yeah. And Santana's like, I'm not jobbing. So they did a double count out on the indies. Because Mike Santana, he takes his shit seriously. Okay, that's the thing about Santana. Why I like him. Joe Hendry will lose to anybody. He don't care. And in fact, he has lost a lot. And if you go through his record in TNA, he's probably got more losses than wins. So
don't do that.
Yeah. But he... Like, but Mike Santana like takes the shit seriously. So I think that they're so different. I think that when they do the title switch, it needs to go to Santana. I think that the company could use a more serious character right now. The houses are going to dip. The houses will dip because he's not as popular as Hendry. Hendry's got that crossover thing, the crossover appeal, super famous on TikTok and shit. Like that is working for him, but Santana doesn't have that, but he will still do great shows.
Here's the thing though. Your WWE interest in this company is going to start to fade at some point, right? Yeah. Cause it's a fad for NXT fans, and eventually they're going to get bored with it. Cause that's just how it goes. And TNA fans are going to be left with the TNA fans, right? The people that stick to this company through thick and thin. And you're going to want a guy to kind of rebuild after that, because like fads just don't last in pro wrestling. They just don't.
Yeah. No, they don't. All right, we'll go to the beginning of the... they made an announcement. Indy Hartwell has signed with TNA. So that came right after that. So she can't work a lick, but she is breathing, and she is a female, and they need those types of people in TNA right now because they don't really have that. So they're not using NXT talent, but they're using former NXT talent with Indy Hartwell. Okay, so we'll go to the Knockouts Championship, the beginning of a triple main event. Masha Slamovic defeated Tessa Blanchard. That was a surprise to me. I thought that Tessa was going to go over here because Masha, as much as I love her, like in the ring, she's incredible, but she doesn't really have that star aura about her. So maybe they're using Tessa to get her that. But she went over here, much to the delight of the crowd who fucking hated Tessa this whole match.
So, okay, here's my question. Cause I'm seeing like in this game, I didn't watch the show. So I'm reading reactions on Twitter. And it's what I'm reading now again, like it's hard to get a vibe on what's real on Twitter because everybody gives like what they think is real or what they want to see. Now, like people were saying that people weren't reacting at all to Tessa. Then I was like, crickets. Is that accurate? Because I don't buy that.
To a degree that it is accurate. So
really?
She came out. It was heated in the beginning. And then there was She's a Racist chant started like within the first minute of the match, but they didn't last very long. And it was like seven white kids, you know what I mean? Like it didn't really last very long. And so that got shouted down pretty quickly. And then after that, because Tessa was on offense so long, I think they lost the crowd. They were just chanting CM Punk and John Cena sucks.
Wow.
Yeah. So they did that for a little while, but then they started hitting some big moves and they got the crowd back. And the crowd, the finish legitimately got over. They got the crowd heat came back, but that there was that part of it. They did not like that Tessa was in the match.
The fact that they're chanting about John Cena and CM Punk really tells me who's in that crowd, right? Like yeah. That really.
So our buddy Nonzo was there. He's co-hosted Brace for Impact several times mm-hmm. and has called into the show. Mm-hmm. He was there. He lives in LA. I actually went to a New Japan show with him one time. Back in the day during pandemic, but he was there and he said it was like filled with first timers. So a lot of WWE fans in the crowd,
which you said was what was going to happen.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to tell everybody it's these WWE has told their fans it's okay to go to these shows and they're going. So, all right, next we go to World Tag Team Championship match. I said that Nick Nemeth wrestled an entire tag team match by himself, and that is accurate. It was Nick, his lousy brother Ryan. They defeated Matt and Jeff Hardy. Matt and Jeff Hardy fucking over like crazy. They did nothing in this match. and Nick and like Matt was all over the place. He was botching moves. Like at one point, he's supposed to get out of the way so the referee can count, but he forgot where he was going and he just ran over the referee by accident while his brother's trying to get a pin. and he forgot where he was at a lot of times. Like it was, he looked bad. I didn't know. I couldn't tell whether or not he might've had a concussion or something during the match. Cause he was like legitimately lost at times. He kept hitting the Twist of Fate over and over again at different spots, like where it just didn't warrant it. It was weird. And then, he ends up getting taken out of the match on the outside. Ryan used the chair, and then in the ring, Nick Nemeth hit a low blow on Jeff Hardy and hit the zigzag. And then Ryan tags himself in and he got the pin, which is pissing off a lot of the hardcores, by the way, because Ryan Nemeth stinks, but his gimmick is he's terrible at wrestling. He's only here because of his big brother. That's the whole gimmick. And now he's riding his big brother's coattails and they're calling themselves the greatest brother tag team of all time. That's the Heat. And they should really highlight the fact that they're going to Canada next month and say, we're the greatest brother tag team that can actually go to Canada. Cause that's the reason why the Hardys lost. Cause they can't go to Canada because of Jeff. Right.
That's pretty good. I do wonder what you said about Matt Hardy. Cause I think he's got a lot of concussions in his career. Yeah. Right. And that's the thing about having a concussion is when you have a couple of them, they come really easy. Right. And Matt, I remember Matt took that really gnarly bump at when he was in AEW. Remember that during the COVID era? Yeah. And like, he's got a lot of those in the course of his career. Spooky.
Yeah.
And Matt Hardy hasn't been good at wrestling in damn near a decade.
Occasionally, like depending on the right opponent and if the crowd was hot, the match can be pretty good. Right. Like the Hardy boys have legitimately had some good matches in TNA, but this was not one of them.
Yeah. Jeff's good still. Like, I don't know, man. I've seen a lot of Matt Hardy wrestle over the last decade. And like, I can't ever say, oh man, Matt Hardy, really good. Still really good. He's really good at being Matt Hardy and he's good with the crowd connection. Always has been, but I like the work. I like the concept. I think the concept's great. Like Ryan Nemeth riding Nick's coattails.
Yeah. Well, he comes out and he says, my big brother. And he says like over and over again. And he gets a lot of heat. He's in the ring though. He's legitimately bad. He is not playing a bad wrestler. He is a bad wrestler, mm-hmm. but he knows that he stinks and he knows the reason why he's there. And they're kind of playing off of that. And okay. It's like, okay, I get the heat. I understand it.
That is one guy you don't have to worry about going to WWE.
No, because he burned that bridge, and he also burned the bridge with AEW. Mm-hmm. Currently blackballed from all of pro wrestling, despite the fact that he's a tag team champion.
Tag team champion. By the way, thank you,
Billy, for the shout there. That was a good observation.
By the way, I hate Nick Nemeth. Continue.
Yeah, okay. Kent State. We're not happy with those.
Fuck them.
Javier Draven says, I honestly can't believe they put the titles on the Nemeth. As soon as I saw the calendar where they're going to Canada next month, I'm like, they got to put the belts on somebody. And they're telling the story. They're going to flip it back to them.
Dude, it's great booking. That's actually really good booking. Like, yeah. No one is harder on Delirious than me because I watched the implosion of Ring of Honor. Yeah. That's really good, really smart booking.
Okay,
the whole thing.
Okay, now we're gonna get the invariable. What about the work rate, guys? Nobody gives a fucking
TNA about the work rate.
Nobody gives a fuck. They're doing gimmicks and stories, and they're trying to have as good of matches as they can. They had some good matches on the show. But with the Hardys, they're the most overact in the company. They don't need to give you 5 stars. They need to give you 2 to 3 and jump off a couple ladders, and you're good.
Here's the thing. If work rate is important to you, that's what you have AEW for.
Yes.
Right? That's what we have New Japan for.
Yes.
Right? If you're into the super melodrama and the big entrances and the over-the-topness, that's what you got WWE for. And TNA is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. There you go. All right, Tactical Playmaker. So this is Nonzo. He's got an alias. So just got home. Rebellion was a good pay-per-view live experience. Not up there with Revolution, but it was pretty good. Nonzo, what did the crowd look like? We're hearing like 4,000, but this someone person named Ronnie says 3,000. Yeah. I was told it was about 4,000 from somebody legitimately that works for TNA. I told it was like 4. So I did get that DM earlier today, and they announced that it was like their biggest crowd in like 10 years in the US. So all right, let's get to the main event. I'll be honest, the main event was I didn't think that this main event was going to be any good. So I didn't go into it with high expectations. I went into it with lowered expectations, and I'll be honest, by the end of it, I thought it was a pretty good match. It was Joe Hendry. He defeated Frankie the Future Kazarian and Ethan Page, former member of the North, to retain this recapper here says NXT title. That's pretty fucking funny. I think that was just a Freudian slip, but I thought it was actually really action-packed. I thought they did a good job, had some good near falls. And it turned out to be like a pretty good three-way match. TNA just did a full tournament of three-way matches, and none of them were even as close as good as this one, to be honest with you. And I thought there was like one or two that were pretty good in that tournament. I thought this one blew them all away. Nonzo says 4K easily in the crowd. Yeah, that makes sense. That's what I heard. Joseph G says hot crowd makes a mid-match pretty good match. That is true.
That's a really good point.
So, but all you got to do when you're working the match, if the crowd is hot, you keep them hot and you keep working it. But I thought like there was one near fall where Ethan Page did a RKO onto the TNA title belt and I bid on it. I thought that was the finish, like legit. I thought oh fuck, Ethan Page is the champion. Thank God I'm quitting. But no, Joe Hendry kicked out. He didn't kick out RKO Randy's, but he'll kick out Ethan Page's. No problem on a title.
Well, that's Ethan Page sucks. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'm so glad they smartly put Frankie Kazarian in this match, because the idea of Ethan Page and Joe Hendry in a main event makes me want to run my face into a wall. Frankie's still awesome. So, I mean, like, it makes sense that the thing worked. I mean, you got a wrestling genius in there with these two guys. So,
yeah,
cool.
In his hometown, and he is he's a good heel.
Frankie's awesome. Always.
Yeah. Frankie is like a really, really good pro wrestler. Mm-hmm. I was bagging on Frankie because he's gotten some wins in big spots that I didn't think he needed. And it's not because I don't think he's a really good wrestler. I just don't think he's like a big star. Right. And but he beat Joe Hendry last year. And I thought that was like, not the right time, but go ahead.
No, I was saying, if you got big wins, you kind of needed him. If you're going to stick him in main events, he's got to have wins at some point, you know?
Yeah. But my argument was he shouldn't be in main events. But turns out they needed him for this match, because if they were going with Ethan Page, that was death.
My favorite thing is when the WWE drones go, "Yeah, Tony let go of Ethan Page." And I'm like, "Yes, he did," and Lex is king, and it's like,
"Yeah,
yep, sure did."
Yeah. Brandon, I'll get to your comment in just a second. I just want to finish my thought here. So after the match, Trick Williams, who just turned heel on NXT, they had a confrontation on NXT on Tuesday night, Joe and Trick did. And so Trick made his TNA debut after the match and attacked Joe Hendry. And I don't think that Trick Williams has a bus. That was the big thing coming out of WrestleMania, that Joe Hendry said that a megastar with a tour bus was looking at coming into TNA. I don't think he was talking about Trick Williams. Maybe Indy Hartwell has a bus. I'm not really sure about that, but definitely not Trick. So I get the feeling he was talking out his ass, which is sounds like that's probably the most accurate thing. But Trick Williams made his debut, and looks like the next program we're going to get is Joe Hendry and Trick Williams. All right, Brandon Crago says, if it's the biggest crowd in 10 years, then it's over 4K, unless TNA was lying, and it's not the biggest crowd in over 10 years. TNA is lying is probably usual good assumption there.
Pro wrestling, like we have to assume they're all lying. Like,
but they hit 4,000 for Genesis in January, and that's the only time that's actually come out, and like Dave reported that. And so here, look, it looks like it's 4K here. Now there was like a little bit of a controversy. Ronnie says they said it was sold out, but I went onto the Odd Jobs from the Voices of Wrestling Discord went onto the USC website because you can buy the tickets there, and they still had tickets for sale even after they announced that it was sold out. So they might, TNA might have been working that deal. So, which if they did is fucking beyond stupid, because you're like cutting off your nose to spite your face. Because don't you want people to go buy the rest of those tickets?
I mean, like if you have a good crowd. You have a win by just saying that it's, and you know, you're not going to sell the rest of those tickets. And because people are going to still show up if it's sold out, they're trying to get buy. Like, they still do that. They're going to buy from scalpers and shit. So I get what you're saying, but I mean, like at the same time, this is pro wrestling. If they say it's a sellout, maybe it's a sellout. Like, they lie about everything. It's pro wrestling.
Yeah.
I expect them to lie to me.
Yeah. Like the WrestleMania just announced two numbers. They were probably not far off from what the real numbers were at WrestleMania. They just lied for the sake of lying.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah, yeah. They just like lie with impunity.
Right. So, they don't even lie to make sense sometimes. They just like lie. Like Vince's thing about WrestleMania 3, like 93,000, blah, blah, blah. Like that they decided beforehand.
Right. Yeah. It's a worked number. I get the feeling that it is very possible that it was not actually sold out. Now, just because they're empty, like, so if, say they did legitimately sell out and there were empty seats, right? That could also mean that people bought tickets and no-showed. That happens sometimes, especially in LA.
Now, it could also mean they didn't sell those seats to begin with, like, especially if they're empty sections, right? Because a sellout means that all the seats that you put up for sale were sold. It doesn't necessarily mean every seat in the building was sold out.
Correct.
That's, I mean,
this is it's a 10,000 seat basketball stadium for the USC Trojans. They set it up for like, I don't know, probably 6,000. And it looks like they might have sold. They might have sold four. Okay. Billy, brother, you did a super chat. God bless you, sir. Thank you very much. He's been a Patreon subscriber for a long time.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you. If you put a super chat, what do you want to talk about? But thank you for the super chat. But
He's been talking about the seats. So like we're talking about what he was talking about. Again, I think people get hard on what a sellout actually is, because they'll bust out. Well, they sold X. Yeah, but they only wanted to sell X. Like that's what you do, right? You say, okay, if you have 10,000 seats, we're at least 2,000 seats. Oh, we sold those 2,000. Cool. Now we're gonna release 3,000 seats. Like, and then you go there. Oh, BJ Bethel says hiatus because BJ listens to half what we say. Wink, wink. Yeah, Mike's move. Mike's
right, move. BJ, I'll address the hiatus as we close the show. I will feed you, sir. Yeah, I will feed you. But yeah, so to JD's point, a sellout means they sold all the tickets they put available for sale. When they go to these bigger arenas, they're not opening up the whole thing, because then you need more resources to take care of that. You need more vending. You need more like t-shirts. You need more security. You need more of that. So you scale the show down to what you think you can. And then when you sell those tickets out, it is considered a sellout. Now people's imaginations run wild with that, especially with TNA. They do a lot of general admission. So you can essentially say sellout, and then you look at what the capacity is, and then that becomes the number when that's like not true. Right.
It's all part of the work, man.
Right, right. Well, and they have the ring. They had a pretty decent sized stage, like they had a big lighting rig and the hard cam. So, but for TNA, 4,000
who's not
really fucking good,
dude. For any wrestling, dude, I'm sorry, any wrestling company in the world, you have 4,000 people in an arena. That's really good. You can't like WWE SmackDown. Just saw in WrestleTix, right? They had a SmackDown coming to, I forget the name of the city. It's got 5,000 seats in, right? And they're only selling six.
Right.
And I forget where the city is, but it's a decent sized city. Like, but that's a normal wrestling show. We get this in the head that if there's not 15,000 people, it's not a good crowd. That's ridiculous. 4,000 people for TNA on a network that nobody's heard of. Great for them. That's fantastic. Yeah.
That is fantastic. So let's go ahead and get into the hiatus. So BJ Bethel, brought it up.
Friend of the show,
multiple time guest, and he is doing his own podcasting now. He just interviewed a Lucha Blog talking about this whole AAA deal and talking about Stephanie Vaquer and all that. I think the audio is either out or is coming out. So BJ is entering the space just as we're bowing out for a little bit. So here's the story.
Hey BJ, if you need a guest for the next couple months, I'm gonna be open.
I had to go on hiatus right when JD like has free time, which fucking of course that's like the perfect Mike and JD thing, right?
I graduated college, like I'm finally done.
Yeah. So, but movers are coming this week. I only got like a few more days left in this house. I'll be living out of a hotel and different campgrounds for like the next 6 weeks. I'll be traveling, driving from California across the country to South Carolina. And then, I got to get all my stuff. I got to get unpacked. Got to get to my new job. I got a lot going on. So I won't even be able to not only talk about wrestling, I'm probably not even gonna be able to watch a lot of wrestling during this time. And I'm driving and I'm the wheel man. Right. So it's not like I can watch and drive. And so like, I got to park and get the kids to bed and do the whole thing. So I might get to watch a little bit here and there. Definitely won't have time to podcast and do all that stuff, but the channel is going to stay alive and I might try to hit up the channel every now and then. And then JD and I will reconvene this summer and figure out when we want to come back. When's the right time to come back? When's the right day to come back?
We are coming back. Like yeah. We are going to come back.
That is absolutely the plan, is to come back. And so this is not a goodbye. This is a see you down the road.
Mm-hmm. This is a season finale, right? Yeah. And sometimes, like, it's a lot of work sometimes to do the show. Like, Mike and I have real lives. Like, we're not Rich and Joe who make a lot of money, you know, for podcasting. You know, like, they make good money. Mike and I do okay. But, I mean, like, it's, you know, not putting food on our tables. It's keeping us, you know, happy. But, I mean, like, and we have lives.
Yeah, and I got to thank my family because I have taken a lot of time away from them to do this show. And the show doesn't provide a lot, doesn't provide any money. It just provides creative fulfillment, which is what I was seeking. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that. But like today, I had to miss the beginning of TNA because I wanted to spend time with my family and go to ice cream, right? So like because of where I live in Hawaii, a lot of the wrestling comes on during the day where I'm supposed to be spending time with my family. So I've actually taken a lot of time away from family. I'm not going to be doing that anymore. I'll be on the East Coast and that probably won't even come up anymore. So, since we got BJ, let's go ahead and play out a classic tune dedicated to BJ Bell.
You are beautiful on the inside. You are innocence personified. And I will drag you down and sell you out.
Guys, I am retiring May 5th, 21 years to the day that I joined the military. Thanks to everybody that's supported the show over the years. Thanks to everybody that's been a chance to share with you. If you've ever liked, subscribed, commented, and remember our YouTube videos, and thank you for the love to me. Thank you for that. And thank you for having me join the race and the whole bunch of stuff for years. And of course, thanks for Garrett Gonzalez for being a sponsor. This is not goodbye forever. That's not goodbye.
Hey,
you can't hear me.
Okay, here, damn thing you're seeing.
Sorry.
That didn't work.
That didn't work. Okay. So I said, thanks to everybody that's been a Patreon subscriber over the years. Thanks to everybody that's ever hit the like button, commented, shared our content, ever dropped in on the comment section and kept our shows going. Thanks to everybody that ever spent a dime on us. That meant the world to me. Thanks to Joe and Rich for the last couple of years putting us on the air, like making us bigger than we ever were before. Mm-hmm. Obviously, thanks to Garrett Gonzalez for giving us our start, giving us our original platform. Without him, we would never become Hall of Fame voters. So, like that means a lot to me. And we made a ton of friends along the way. And thanks to everybody that's ever supported us.
Thanks to Jeremy Finestone for being smart enough to figure out that these two dorks will get along really, really well if we put them on a podcast together. Because Mike and I were friends, but we never did a show before Jeremy stuck us both on a TNA show, right? And that worked out great. You know, Thanks to all you guys, man. Mike and I had a blast.
Yeah. And thanks to everybody that's ever supported my military service. I know we do talk about it sometimes on here. But 21 years coming up on May 5th, that is my retirement date. Having my ceremony there. I am not going to be live streaming that on YouTube. But maybe there will be some clips out there eventually of my retirement ceremony. But this is going to be it for a little while. And until next time, JD, should we hit the line?
Let's hit it.
Mahalo. Thanks, everybody. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Let's get Godella back in here. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.